Mr. Shapiro, your poetry is highly lauded with formal prizes, and you seem to be very prolific while you're also, I saw the Cortland Review YouTube, you said you've taught 2,000 to 3,000 students.
Yeah, I wasn't exaggerating. I have. I do know more about the house I live in than I pretended in that interview.
So. Got it. Well, I'm glad you're coming to Murray, and I'd love for you to share a work that you've, I guess, just finished. You have a new book coming out?
Yeah, I have a new book that is just out from University of Chicago Press. It's called Real to Real, and I'll read the first poem in it, if that's okay with you.
Please.
Okay, it's called Wherever My Dead Go When I'm Not Remembering Them, and it's sort of a poem about memory, about where the people who we've loved and lost are when we're not actively remembering them. So this is the poem. Wherever my dead go when I'm not remembering them. Not gone, not here. A fern trace in the stone of living tissue it can somehow flourish from. Or the dried up channel and the absent current. Or maybe it's like a subway passenger on a platform in a dim lit station late at night between trains after the trains have stopped. Ahead, only the faintest rumbling of the last one disappearing. And behind the dark, you're looking down for any hint of light. Where is it? Why won't it come? You wandering now along the yellow line, restless, not knowing who you are or even where, until you see it. There it is, approaching. And you hurry to the spot you don't know how you know is marked for you and you alone as the door slides open into your being once again my father. My sister or brother, as if nothing's changed, as if to be known were the destination. Where are we going? What are we doing here? You don't ask. You don't notice the blur of stations we're racing past. The others out there watching in the dim light, baffled, who for a moment thought the train was theirs. That's the point.
It really takes you into that. Oh, subway station, doesn't it?
Tries to. Yeah, you know, it's a poem that sort of tries out different metaphors, and then when it hits the one that it's looking for, then it just sort of tries to inhabit it.
How in language did you achieve the movement? I mean, how did you do that? Can you parse out that section again where the train is going past?
Well, one of the ways I did it was I grew up in Boston, and there's a subway system in Boston where it's called trolley, you know, streetcars, but they do go underground when you get into downtown Boston. And I had a specific station in mind, in fact, a station at Boylston Street in Boston, and where you're underground and the tracks turn in a pretty sharp angle. And I just imagined myself there, you know. Once I it wasn't just a kind of abstract metaphor, it was an actual place. Though I'm obviously using it metaphorically, it was easy to describe it once I put myself in it.
You have written a lot about empty places at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was my previous book, Night of the Republic. Yeah, the story behind that was I went out in the middle of the night to get something from my wife and walked into a supermarket and there was nobody there and it was all lit up. So it was just the strangeness of being in a public place, at night with no people in it. It just seemed oddly strange. So I suddenly got the idea to start writing about all these public places and just imagine them without people in them, see what I could come up with. And it was sort of like being an anthropologist from Mars, you know, coming down and looking at these structures and trying to imagine what kinds of creatures inhabited these structures or built them and what desires stood back of them, what kinds of needs, why they were the way they were, you know. So it was a way of kind of imaginative exercise or thought experiment where I could take all of the the most familiar things in our culture and try to look at them under the aspect of the strange.
When did it gel for you that writing poetry, or writing, period, because you've written novels as well, when did it gel for you that this would be your path of life?
Well, I was pretty young, actually, 16 years old. I didn't grow up in a house of writers and professional people. My mother was a secretary. My father was a foreman in a slaughterhouse. And then when that closed, he was a salesman in Saks Fifth Avenue, you know, in the men's department. My sister was the first person to go to college. My brother never went to college. I was the second. When I was in high school, I was primarily an athlete. I played basketball. I was on the basketball team. I was at, I guess it was the end of my sophomore year. I went to a dance at the end of the year, and so I was 15 years old, and got into a fight, had my nose badly broken, and I couldn't play basketball over the summer, but I ran to stay in shape. It's like a Shaggy Dog story, but there's a point to it. And I was in great shape, and in the fall I went out to cross-country team, and then when I was playing basketball I had to wear a hockey mask. And I was in great shape. I was going to move into the starting lineup of the varsity team at the beginning of my junior year. And the first day of practice, I went diving for a loose ball and broke my wrist and had to sit out. And I got so depressed that I started writing. That's how I started writing poems. And once I started writing poems, I started got interested in reading them and wanted to do it well. And so this was in 1965, 66. And so rock music was a big deal, and folk music was a big deal, and so I started paying attention to the words of songs, and that's sort of how I got into it, and then became just as devoted and disciplined about doing it as I was an athlete. And in fact, being an athlete was great preparation for being a writer, because I learned how to fail in public. My coaches yelled at me all the time. It wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't devastating. So when I went to college and started writing and someone didn't like my poems, it wasn't a big deal. It never devastated me. And it became, in fact, kind of competitive thing where I was going to demonstrate to a professor that I could do it if he thought I couldn't. I also learned how to, you know, stay, you know, in shape, so to speak. And poetry, like basketball, is something that in order to do it well, you have to do it all the time. And you have to be disciplined about it. It's not something that you do just when you feel like doing it. You know, 99% of it is just showing up, you know, being dedicated and doing it even when you don't feel like doing it. My first day in college, Brandeis University, I walked into a writing class with this very, well, you know, it's funny, he's younger than I am now, but he seemed like Methuselah at the time, J.B. Cunningham, and he was a really kind of crusty guy, smoked Lucky Strikes in class, he wore, you know, bolo ties, and was from Denver, and was a child of the Depression, and he didn't suffer fools gladly, and he assumed everybody was a fool until proven otherwise. The way he ran the class was you gave him your poem, and then he would read it out to the class and not say who it was. And then the class had to criticize it on the strength of hearing it in his voice, which was hardly above a whisper because he had emphysema. So I gave him my poem. I was in a class of 40 people. They were from freshmen to graduate students because he was the only game in town at Brandeis University in 1970. This was. And as luck would have it, he picked my poem first. And he read it out. And he said, well, what do you all think? And nobody said anything. And then he held the poem up to the class. And then he said, this is nothing more than spilled ink. And he crumpled it up and threw it away, threw it into a waste paper basket. He actually had a really good shot, you know, I mean, he threw it across the room into the basket. You know, and then he went on to the next poem. And, well, you know, the next class, he did that to everybody. I wasn't singled out. That's just the way he taught, and if you can call it teaching. And then he, you know, the second day of class, there were four people there, you know, 40 people. Everybody fled because nobody wanted to be treated like that. But I was one of the four because I was used to that kind of treatment. It wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't devastating. And so I learned everything I could from him. And I actually eventually became very good friends. But he never liked anything I did very much. And the most positive thing he ever said to me was, well, Mr. Shapiro, if I liked this sort of thing, I'd say you did it very well. you know, but it didn't matter whether I did it well or not. It was something I did because I couldn't not do it. And I was prepared to do it and nothing else, and to arrange my life around it, no matter whether I was successful at it or not. I haven't had a moment of career anxiety in my entire life for what that's worth.
My goodness, what a great story. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Well, I really enjoyed it. Great talking to you.